Live in Corporate is brought to you by Doximity. Doximity is committed to fostering an inclusive and diverse work environment where differences are valued, practices are equitable, and employees experience a sense of belonging that allows them to bring their full, authentic selves daily. As medicine's largest network, there's an elevated level of responsibility to everything we do. We don't take that responsibility lightly and are committed to working towards a more equitable world inside and beyond our virtual office walls. So if you want to learn more about Doximity, go to your app store and type in D-O-X-I-M-I-T-Y. Again, that's D-O-X-I-M-I-T-Y.
Good evening. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Access Point Live, brought to you by Living Corporate. Living Corporate is a digital media network consultancy focused on workplace diversity, equity, and inclusion. Living Corporate centers and amplifies Black and Brown voices in the workplace through digital media production and business-to-business consulting. The network offers a variety of programming, including The Access Point. The Access Point is a weekly webinar focused on preparing Black and Brown aspiring and experienced professionals for the workforce by having the real, nuanced talks they don't know they need. During each episode, we examine real challenges you face at work and offer expert advice on dealing with your organization, your boss, your coworkers, and your career. Here's the disclaimer. The thoughts and views expressed in tonight's discussion do not reflect the views of any organization with which the host or guests may be affiliated. Welcome. I am Dr. Wendy M. Edmonds, and we are excited to be here. Tell you a little bit about me. I am an author, the author of Intoxicating Followership, which really speaks to why do people follow bad people? I am a management consultant and also a professor. I'm here tonight with wonderful guests and my awesome, awesome host, Dr. Lonnie Morris. Take it away.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wendy. I am Lonnie Morris. I am also a management consultant and professor and an author. I spend my time helping very seasoned professionals unpack all the woes of the workplace so that you hate your job less. I am so excited for our conversation tonight. The show is entitled The Woman King at Work. And so we're really talking about so many things related to gender and parity and leadership and compensation about Black and Brown women and when they become the boss and what it means to protect your queendom and how to reign over your peers and managing others in the workplace and surviving what this journey can be like. And our guest is such an incredible, incredible, phenomenal professional. And I'm so glad to call you friend and mentor. And it has been an incredible journey to watch your career take off this way. And I want to welcome to the Access Point Dr. Cynthia M. Sims, who is a tenured professor in educational and organizational leadership at Clemson University. She runs the Masters of Human Resources Development. She is an award-winning researcher and expert on the ways gender and diversity influence leadership in the workplace. She is a former Fortune 100 HR executive, having served as Director of Staff Operations, Director of Learning and Performance Improvement, and Director of Human Resources. It is such a pleasure to have Dr. Cynthia Sims on this show with us. How you doing, Doc?
Thank you, Lonnie, for that wonderful and kind introduction. Lonnie and I have been, as well as Wendy, have been traversing this journey together, and I'm so happy to be here to share what knowledge I have gained about women and leadership.
That is awesome. So let's jump right in here, okay? Because this is an exciting conversation. I've been waiting for us to have this. So I think there are a few things to sort of set the stage for why we're having this conversation. Number one, because of the incredible film, The Woman King, and I hope both of you saw it. And so I enjoyed it. And there were so many things running through my mind about what I saw, not just in the action, but what I understood about the story, but even the nomenclature of The Woman King, rather than the woman as queen. And so thinking about what that means in the space, and I immediately think of things through the organizational space because that's the work that we do. But there were some other things that have been happening around this time and in this month, I think are important to help contextualize why we're having this conversation. at the opening of October, we saw that, it released first by Rolling Stone, that Aretha Franklin had been was being tracked by the FBI for 40 years. And I started thinking, what does this mean when you're at the pinnacle of your career and you've contributed so much value over time, but you are still targeted? And then we saw earlier this month that the New Orleans mayor, LaTanya Cottrell, that she was being targeted around. First, it was this rent-free controversy where she was living in a space that was provided by the public and not paying that. And then she got into some trouble about these flights and upgrades and had to pay $30,000 back because of some flight challenges. And then I listened to Real Talk Tuesdays just this week, and Zach Nunn had April Ryan on, and she just released a book this month called Black Women Will Save the World. So I think the context is so strong for us to think about what it means to be a Black woman, a woman of color in an organization, and to be leading, and all of these things are happening. So I start with that as sort of prepping us for this conversation, and then I want to open this up and say, so what? Why do we have this gender divide? What is this thing in leadership, and why does it exist? Why is this on the top of mind for people? Because I think that when we think about all the things that happen in the workplace often, we often discuss them around how men behave, but we are not writing papers and doing workshops on how to lead like a man. So why is the idea of leading in this way so significant to us? Dr. Sims.
All right. Well, thank you for that question. And so let's unpack that a little bit. So when we start looking at women and the woman king, we live, unfortunately, in a patriarchal society. And so most of our concepts around leadership, around kingdoms, really have to do with a male gender. And so we have a long storied history in Black America in terms of women and leadership. However, we have been given a lot of more freedom in terms of exercising our leadership. So we have led different philanthropic organizations. We have been pillars of our community. We have been pillars in our family. But unfortunately, in this current time, when we think of women or let me paraphrase that, when we think of leader, in most instances around the world, the image that comes up is an image of a man.
Yeah.
And so that lies the problem. And having done research on women and leadership, because I really wanted to study how women might be able to cast leadership in their own image, and they have. But unfortunately, when you look at their employees, the people that work for them, they recognized their leadership, they appreciated their leadership, they resonated with their vision, they applauded them, and they captured their hearts and minds, but they did not identify them as a leader. They did not identify with them. And so I really do believe that when you have a woman who is the woman king, people appreciate her, but they don't know what to do with her. So it's like, I see this powerful woman. I don't know what to do with powerful women.
Mm. Wow.
That can even bring about some fear, wouldn't you say, Dr. Sims?
Absolutely. Mm. So there's a lot of confusion. Unfortunately, we live in a society where people know how men and leaders are supposed to act. They've seen so much of it over their lifetime in the media, you know, in their job. It's like they have a shorthand. They don't even have to think about it. And unfortunately, the good and the bad things. So the other side, when I studied that, you as a man can show up into a room and they really aren't going to pay much attention to your personal leadership qualities or vision. They're going to say, I know what a man is. I know what a male leader is. And so therefore, you're a man, you're a leader, and these are what I'm going to ascribe to you. So there's a huge disconnect. And so one of the things that's good about that is that women do have the opportunity to paint a picture of themselves the way that they want to see them. But the other side of that is, even though they paint the picture of how they want to lead, unlike men, when women lead, they have to be granted their leadership or their leadership crown by their subordinates, their employees, their associates, the people that they have to work. Men don't have to work that hard to get leadership. They show up and they say, "I'm the king," and people salute. Women show up and they say, "I'm the king." They say, "You talking to us?"
Wow. So then if, in fact, science shows and statistics show that women are highly educated. Women of color make up 4% of the C-suite executives. How come more of us are not crowned?
That is an excellent question. And so I do believe that this is going to begin to shift. We now have, for the first time in the American history, that people under 40, it is now a majority minority in the workplace. And the research is very clear, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to see more of that when school children have leaders who look like them, the school children do better. They outperform, they outachieve. And so when we start looking at women and leadership, women are over, what's happening is we're seeing this, what we call this leaky pipeline. You know, so women overwhelmingly are graduating from college. So more women are graduating from college. Yet even in getting those first rung corporate positions, they are about at 50%. By the time you reach the first rung, what happens? The women start leaking out. So you don't see women getting promoted to that first rung of maybe supervisor, and that next rung of being manager, and that next rung of being director or VP suite. Each rung, less and less women are selected. And a lot of that has to do with, again, how are you evaluating these women? If your only version of leadership is a white male and you're a Black female, there's this juxtapositioning, this dissonance that is created that women have to work through. So unfortunately, that saying is very true. You do have to work a lot harder, have all of the credentials, essentially get all of the support. So literally the stars have to align almost.
So go ahead. So I want to ask a little bit about, when we think about this, what do men need to understand and do? And I look at this early in the summer, something came out on a site called the Resume Lab. And so it's a career development space, and they help give you career advice and how to shape the things about your career and try to move and promote and navigate in career path. But in this study they have, they said when men were asked, only 28% said they would prefer a woman as a supervisor. Only 53% felt positive about women in leadership. And only 17% of them said they would trust a woman to lead their company. So what is it that someone in my role, other men who are in the workplace, other men who are listening to this conversation, what do we need to understand? What do we need to do?
Well, those are very good questions. So try and keep me honest on my responses to them. So one is, you know, when you have a woman, what they are saying is actually borne out in reality. So we call some of the research that I saw calls that when women get in charge, they have a thorny floor. Men are not going to accept her crown. They are going to, in some instances, do whatever they can to get rid of that crown. They are going to challenge her. They might view her as illegitimate. And so a lot of times it's perception. Now, what are some of the things that can be done? One is the research is very clear that women need to be mentored and sponsored. So men can make sure that they're allies in the workplace when they're seeing that disparate treatment, treating women differently, that they step in and be good allies and say, oh no, Sandra was speaking, please let her speak. Or yes, I think Sandra had a good point. So back Sandra up. So back the woman up. Make sure that you are willing to mentor that person because they need your mentorship as well as sponsorship. Make sure that you provide them with the resources. So once they become managers, provide them with a consultant that they can work with, a coach, help prepare their employee group that they are going to be working with, that says, okay, you're going to be working with someone new. She's a woman leader. And then making sure that her path is smooth as possible. So those are some of the things that men can do in terms of supporting women. And I also want to talk about systems. So a lot of systems, there is bias in the workplace when you look at performance evaluations. When the research is very clear that when a man comes in and they look at his credentials, if he has 80% of them, more or less, they're going to say, oh, good job. I think he's a really good candidate. Yeah. That same woman could walk in the door and she could have 115% of the qualifications. And they'll say, you know what? I don't know if I really trust that she really is all that. Let me go and double check. I need to get validation. So one of the things is making sure that you have clear criteria and make sure that that criteria is not based off of sort of best practices, because subjective. Guess where those best practices exactly, you know? And so one of the things is if everybody is deemed to be qualified, so when that first rung of the promotion, unless there's a reason not to promote them, promote everybody. Why have the conversation?
Sign me up, promote everybody. I love that. This minute. So I want to make sure that everybody who is listening to this is clear that I am the only man on this panel right now, and I am definitely the weakest link.
Oh, Lonnie, Dr. no one would ever call you a weak link.
Not at all.
Dr. Wendy, what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't want to everyone to assume that because a woman comes in and wants to be a leader that she cannot lead. So I would like to see men in the workplace just not base it on an assumption that because a woman is a leader that she cannot lead, that she needs the help, that she has to be fixed, that she has to be better because of how they measure, how they're evaluating in the system. That's one of the things. And there needs to be more than one. It should never be a chosen one. Too often when you do see a woman in leadership, she is by herself. She is the only one or one of few. And that's dangerous too, because that also, you know, having that lack of representation can affect the level of confidence. And when it goes back to what Dr. Cynthia said, needs to be more than one, because you can't be what you can't see. That's what Marion Wright Edelman says. Now, she was the founder and president of the Children's Defense Fund. If you don't see someone like you in leadership, what are you going to aspire for or aspire to? So we need more than that. Make those faces, not for one, but for many. If we're going to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, it has to be more than a web page. It has to be seen within your organization.
So I love this. I want to follow this with a little bit of talk about what this looks like in terms of a power play for women. So that same site, the Resume Lab, and the same piece they had back in the summer, they found that 55% of the people that they surveyed acknowledge that women bosses are held to higher standards. And so both Dr. Wendy and Dr. Sims, both of you mentioned that. And then those same people that were surveyed, almost 70% of them said, and we know it is worse for women of color. So we've been talking broadly about women, but let's drill down to what that means for the women who are on this call with me, look like us. What's happening here?
Well, you are exactly right. So this is where intersectionality comes from. So when you think about being race and gender, and the two actually intersex, it becomes it multiplies. And so that our research has been very clear. Women, Black women, experience both the double whammy of gender bias, racial bias, and intersection. So they're going to experience more microaggressions than a woman, a white woman, or a Black man. And so those are some of the reasons why one of the things that I've just, shouting back out toward what Dr. Wendy was just talking about, when you're looking at tokenism in the workplace, you know, it is really hard to be that one and only. You have all eyes on you. You are very visible, hyper visible. You can also turn out to end up being invisible in the workplace. So you're navigating all of that. But if you are able to be very well prepared, the research is also very clear. If you've been very well prepared, if you have the credentials, the strong credentials, you have the pedigree, you have the social skills, and I would say that that is going to be probably very critical to one overcoming those obstacles in the workplace and actually moving forward, as well as making sure that you join a company. And that's one of the things I would say that Black women should really try to do. Try and find a company where your contributions are going to be valued, because if if you're not, you are just a salmon swimming upstream, and it is very hard to overcome. So try and find a company that's going to really value you. And one of the things I did want to go back to was about leadership style. And one of the reasons I started studying about leadership, I had leader that I used to work with. And whenever we would look for women leaders, you know, he wanted that sort of tough girl persona, that in your face, and that combativeness, that sort of edge.
Wait, and that's not you?
And I kept looking at him. I said, is that the only leadership model out there? Come on. Mm-hmm. And so we know that democratic styles of leadership, which women tend to do more of that collaborative approach, that all for one, one for all, that sort of team base, you know, having clear vision, caring about the team. That's a lot of times where women can often excel. And so that's a very different type of leadership. And I will say that really is the saving grace, because in this day and time, that is the type of leadership that employees, as well as most organizations, are looking for. And so that old-fashioned, transactional, in-your-face, cigar shopping type of persona, you know, that is going away.
It's going away, but that's how they are measured. It is changing. And I'm glad to hear you say that about the leadership, because that is how you're measured. The worse you behave in meetings, on the job, the more value they put into your leadership style, because they equate that with manliness. They equate that with being able to lead. The more rude you are. And that was my experience. But you know, again, when I think of the industry that I was in, it was such a cutthroat industry. But I will also say too that when you don't exhibit that bad behavior, you have to gain your respect through your credentials, maintaining your values, never compromising your integrity, and they learn to respect you. they learn to do that.
I feel kind of bad. So I'm thinking, particularly when you started with saying the bad behavior in meetings, to say, well, hey, I have shown out at a couple of meetings. Am I the bad person? But maybe this is not about me. I think I want to bring up some pretty jarring statistics about what it's like for Black women at work in particular. In last year, so 2021, the Gallup Center for the Center on Black Voices did some work with Black women and talked to them directly about their experiences. And they found that Black women are less likely to feel valued. And both of you just talked about finding an organization that matches your values and that values you. So they're less likely to feel valued. They are less likely to feel like they are treated with respect. We just talked about that. Less likely to feel they are treated the same as their coworkers, and they are less likely to feel that they are thriving with healthy well-being in the workplace. Matter of fact, that was at 47%, less likely to feel that they're thriving in healthy well-being. Then we saw also last year, CNN did a piece called Executives Are Holding Black Women Back. We just saw, and this is weird, maybe not so weird, but kind of looking at the connection, this October is also Black History Month in the UK. And UK has a UK site called People Management. And they did something earlier in the spring called Black Women Aren't Respected at Work. So I want to sort of discuss that we are acknowledging and documenting that Black women, the woman kings, are particularly under attack in the workplace. And that there is a movement happening now to not only document those experiences, but also to dismantle the structures for that. So how do we keep the momentum going around that? How do we leverage what we're learning in these times?
That is such a great set of questions. And I really appreciate you sharing some of that background about women and Black women in particular at work. And a lot of this has to do with who the image is. So unfortunately, when we look at who is normative, so when women are, when Black women are evaluated, they are often evaluated as compared to the dominant culture. And in the U.S., and you're talking about white women. If you're looking at Blacks, when people think about Blacks, they evaluate Blacks against Black men. And so we are not either Black men, we are not white women. And so therefore we end up being doubly disadvantaged. And so that's where really their disrespect comes from, is because they've got this model that is not us. And so we need to replace those models. And that's one of the reasons why I argue that we need to have intersectional models so that we can really capitalize on all of the advantages that Black women bring to the workplace. Black women are 7% of people in the workplace. And just think, for most organizations, if you could move the needle by 7 percentage points, you would be considered a hero. So
hero.
Just think.
Exactly. The woman king. You would be considered the woman king.
Exactly. So being able to capitalize. So some of the things that Dr. Wendy said, which is making sure that you have enough, typically it's 10, 15% of the population, so that people feel like they really do have a home base. And all of this has to do with really acculturization. You know, so what is the Crown Act that is out there? You know, Black women couldn't even show up with their own hair. You know, so now we are trying to say, hey, accept us for who we are. We don't need to look like someone else, you know? And so this is how we dismantle those systems of bias that are out there. And the other thing is in educating people, I like this term called cultural humility. We need to have people in the workplace that have cultural humility, who don't view, if you don't look like me or act like me, therefore you are less than. if you don't look like me or
that.
Act like me, it's
too.
Okay. Yeah, we need to have mutual adaptability where we can all sort of get together and be valued, and we create a workplace from scratch. And that's really the test here of saying, okay, what do we value, not what has been imposed upon us. And people start to consciously think, is this truly what I want to sign up for? What should a new workplace look like?
Well, then that means that cultural humility squashes the need of or the fear of having to think that code switching is something that you have to do to be accepted.
Wait a minute. You saying we're getting away from code switching? Wait a minute.
That squashes it. I love that cultural humility.
I remember talking to Zach Nunn about some of these issues some while back, and he asked me about, well, what do I think we need to do? I said, well, you see all these people taking trips to the moon and taking trips to going up to Mars, all these space expositions. We need to get on one of those, right? Because in order to start fresh, start new, we need to go into new places with new beings that don't have all of these things that we're carrying into the workplaces. That's my option, right? Let's take me to space. Let's start a new organization there. Where I don't have to deal with this. So I want to talk a little bit about social identity around this, because we're talking about all these different things, particularly as it relates to intersectionality and how we show up and the double whammies here. So there was a study a few years back in the Journal of Applied Psychology, and they looked at both genders and how they rated supervisors. And they found that both genders rated their own supervisor, if it was the same gender, more favorably, even when the credentials, the roles, positions, and experiences were identical. However, women rated women supervisors higher on these areas of competence and warmth. And Dr. Sims talked about sort of those democratic leadership styles that where we get some of that. Women employees engaged in more positive behaviors when working for other women. Women were more likely to go above and beyond for women bosses than men were for women bosses. So not only are there more things that men need to do to get out of our own way in this space, right, to come into and to step into this idea of cultural humility, but now we're saying that this battle of the genders shows up in so many other ways. One of the things you said earlier, Dr. Sims, was, hey, promote everybody. When we look at studies like this, it's saying that might be hard. How do we break this glass?
Wow, that is so powerful. So it does not have to. And I think we're going to hopefully see more of this, especially as the younger generation comes to be. I think that the role of gender in the workplace and the stereotypes or the attributes, we're seeing more of a blend of styles. We're seeing that people have more gender fluidity, and gender roles are being more less prescribed. Now, with that being said, when we look at people who are supervising individuals in the workplace, there's a lot of, one could call it sort of common, we would call it look like me bias. So people tend to...
Oh yeah, I see that all the time. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So people tend to resonate with people who look like them. And so I think that people just need to really... start to be much more reflective and actually stop asking women. Women do a lot of the emotional housekeeping in a workplace setting. And so that's one of the reasons why they may be judged more harshly. Not only are they expected to be competent, but they're expected to be warm. They're expected to be caring. They're expected to do all of these things that men don't even have to think about doing. And if they do it, it's like, oh, praise King, you're wonderful because you
praise the woman King. Thank you for those bagels.
So I think that there is definitely research, and I'm really happy to see that what we're seeing is that women have a more appreciation for women in the workplace, because that's not there always been the case.
Yeah,
I know, yeah. But that dispels all of that infighting, no support. But I think now we can realize when we see a woman in position, what that must be like. There's a level of sympathy and empathy that I have when I see women in leadership. I can relate to that. And so I think I may have been one of these people in 2018 they talked to for this study.
They talk to you? Or at least they're telling your story.
I was one of those.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's funny.
But one of the things I would like to say is that we all have implicit biases and some of how that actually shows up. And so I'll use this analogy. So if you're a woman, and it's just what Dr. Wendy said, you may be able to interact with them in a way because there are certain things that you've experienced based on your gender that you're going to be sympathetic to one another. The same with the man, you know, so a men interact with other men. It's like, I'm a man. I know how men work. I'm a woman. I know how women work. But when you're a woman and you've got a male boss, you typically have an idea about that because you've seen so much of that in the media. Yeah. But when you're a man and you have a woman boss, you don't see a lot of that. And so it's like a brand new frontier. What do I do with this? How is this supposed to work? I'm not quite sure what the relationship is. So it's a shorthand. And I think we have to, again, get out of our comfort zones and say, okay, let me just suspend. Let me suspend my thoughts on what a leader is. And, you know, is this person doing the job? Are they approaching it in a way? Because some of my experience has been, you know, men tend to be a little bit more transactional. So, and what do I mean by that? It's like, what have you done for me lately? You know, did you give
me a raise?
And what can
you give me right now?
And what are you going to do for me right now? You know, they are very bottom line oriented for the most part. Women, nah, not so much. You know, they flex a lot more. They tend to say that they're more appreciative. So I think that as men, you know, I've had men say when you start to, you know, get all sort of those soft skills, and it's like, are you trying to trick me? I just want to know, are you going to pay me more money?
Leave me out of the fuzzy wuzzy.
Exactly.
Oh, that is critical. Any thoughts, Dr. Wendy?
Look, I think Dr. Cynthia handled that one. She said it all.
So let's say, so the backdrop of this is whiteness, right? That's what we face in organizations. That's why we're having this conversation about the Woman King, and we're placing in the context of all these things happening with women of color, particularly Black women who've been targeted in organizations at the height of their career, pinnacles of what they're doing. So beginning of the pandemic, the journal Gender, Work, and Organization had this study about what do we do in the face of white gaze, right? So this is the idea of seeing everything through the white lens. And that's the normative, that we know that the dominant culture comes from that. So he found, here's what they described, that the white gaze puts you in the context where things are imposed, so that we expect that this is how, that the way that the dominant culture operates is the way that everyone's supposed to operate. It's presumed, so that we assume that no matter who you are, what culture you come from, no matter what your background is, your pedigree, your credentials, that you know this is the way we do things here, and it comes to this white paradigm that is venerated, so it is valued, idealized, and celebrated, and preferred, that even when you make your suggestions at the intersection of your race and your gender, that you know that that is a suggestion and it is outside of the norm, because the way we do things here, the way this organization has come about, all these things are settled in the white gaze, and that it is forced, that is top down from the organization and in leadership structures, that this is authoritative. And we know that it's controlled by other people. So even when you offer your this newness, this new frontier, that we see that as a drop in the bucket rather than the whole bucket. So what are our strategies when we are talking about the woman and the woman king who is operating the organization against the white gaze with these four forces that are pushing against you? How do we navigate that?
Wow. So you are very correct. And so this is where we really need to look at systems. And I think you said it very perfectly, Dr. Morris, in terms of this is something that has been passed down. There've been best practices. And so it's become sort of a meritocracy, you know, all the things that I hate, which is this person the right fit? Well, what does that mean?
Yeah.
You know,
well,
so
that's an awful term, because fit is a pseudonym. It's just.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
The word. Code word.
Is it a code word? Teach me. Code for what?
Like me.
We don't.
There we
right,
go.
We don't want them and accept that they're like me.
The like
exactly.
Me bias. All right.
So it's the like me bias. So what does that say in terms of how do you navigate the workplace? Well, it depends on what workplace you're looking at. And so if you have a sort of a traditional good old boy sort of network, and this has been some of my observations, which is we have spent so much time and energy and effort trying to get women in the workplace, in engineering and STEM jobs and math and sales, and they go there and the culture is so
toxic
and affront to who they are that they then leave. And so why are we spending all of this money preparing women to enter a culture that they view as foreign and hostile? And so we need to start looking at cultures. And this is not easy, because most cultures don't self-examine themselves. They don't say, how are we doing? We want to attract people. We can attract people in the door, but we can't keep them. So what do we need to do to attract and keep them? It really is all about engagement. It's all about mutuality. It's all about adaptation and making sure in a very real sense that people's voices are heard, that the organization, instead of me coming into an organization and you expecting me to assimilate and adapt to you, I should come into an organization and we should mutually adapt to one another.
Come on now, mutually adapt to one another. Don't make me fit. Let's grow in this space together. Let's adjust to one another. That's what relationships are about, right? That
exactly.
We learn each other and then we move forward with mutual understanding. Not you don't fit here, so you gotta go. I love that. Dr. Wendy, were you gonna say something?
I wanted to say that recruiting could be the key if you have the support systems in place. So, you know, companies and organizations do evaluations all the time as to what the workplace looks like. They have to report that information. And recruiting to have more women of color is more than a thought. You have to bring us in, and have support systems, because otherwise you bring them into the shark tank. You bring them into the white spaces where it is going to be difficult, it is going to be toxic, and then we want them to survive. So what I've heard on the other side is, but we keep trying to. And what happens? Retention becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm.
We did try. But if they're not listening to the voices of the very people that they're hiring and they're listening to them on their way out the door, they won't know or have a desire to make the accommodations that are necessary to ensure that women leaders are successful in white spaces.
And let me follow up on that. So one of the things that I actually advance is that there is a lot of research on diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. And I wish that I could say that they have been successful for the, but for the most part, the answer is not so much.
Yeah.
And so my response is we need to, instead of hiring leaders for their technical capabilities, you can teach anybody technical capabilities. I can teach you math, I can teach you science, but it is very difficult to teach people soft skills around inclusivity and equity. We need to hire for that. If you don't have those soft skills, thank you very much. You are not needed in this role. You should not be put in leadership.
Right now, so, Dr. Sims, you are hired.
So
you're in.
So I think that's it. And then the other thing I wanted to bring up is if you allow people to bring their full authentic selves to work, you are going to end up, if you work in a organization where inclusivity is the norm, where there's mutual adaptivity to one another, you are going to end up with greater creativity. You're able to harness the diverse voices. You're going to end up with greater productivity. All of these things have been found true. So I want to go back to what Dr. Wendy was saying. If you have a garden, who in their right mind would bring a cactus into a garden in Florida, right? So you could say, yeah, I think we should diversify. Let's bring a cactus in here. And as you look at them and say, did you see that we could water 7 times a day here? You can't bring a cactus. And then they look at you amazed and say, that cactus didn't grow. And then what do? They go get another cactus. It's like, y'all crazy, right?
This is the best analogy ever. Oh my gosh. Do not bring your cactus here. That is the worst. All right. So this is my last question. I love this idea of the cactus. So when I looked at this piece from CNN from last year, the 3 ways executives hold Black women back at work. And here are the things they said. So I wanna round out our conversation with these things about how Black women particularly are being held back. And they say, stop othering with inspiration to gender or race statements, right? She is the first woman in this role. She is the first Black woman to be on this team. The second thing they said is, stop delegating outside activities. What'd you call it? The emotional housekeeping. Let employees tell you their interests and then let them align with those activities rather than you saying, hey, Cynthia, I want you to go and be on this committee. Share the opportunities that people select. Third thing is drop the strong Black woman myth and instead check on everyone, to your point, Dr. Sims, promote everybody, including but not exclusively the Black women. So the way that executives and the structures that we have right now are holding Black women back through othering, delegating outside activities, and this Black woman myth. So that seems like a good foundational starting place. What is missing from that list? That's my question to you both. What's missing from that list?
Well, I'll go ahead and start. So I really do like that stop othering because stereotype threat. I'm not a big fan of some of the other things out in the workplace that people talk about in terms of, but there is research that says when you talk about Black women as either racial or gender minorities, that they therefore sort of get deer in the headlights, and then they are less likely to perform because you've essentially sort of acculturated them to do that. So that could be a possibility. But one of the things that are really holding Black women back, I just want to say first off, you know, the Black woman king is really very apt. You know, Black women have knocked the socks off in terms of educational attainment and workplace attainment. Off. You know, so we are one of the most highly educated people of color in the U.S. in terms of going to school and getting associate degrees and bachelor's degrees and master's degrees and doctoral degrees. We are all about education. We are in the workplace longer than most other women groups, and we are very hard workers. So we deserve a space at the table because we're educated, we are going to come to work every day, and we're going to work throughout our career. So my biggest thing is give the Black women a chance. The biggest thing that Black women need, and the research is very clear, they need developmental support. What does that mean? They need a group of mentors that can meet various needs of them, that can help them shepherd through the workplace. That is really where the distinction comes. The other part of it is, unfortunately, you know, Harvard had a MBA had a review, and even though Black women may indeed have all of these great credentials, get these jobs, they are still more likely to be passed over. Yeah. So one of the things that I would say, try and find an organization where you are not the first, and that there are other people in leadership, and that the leadership has a clear support, render support of you, and it is not just lip service. So if you're looking around and you're seeing the executive ranks and you see nobody that looks like you, don't be the pioneer. Go someplace where they look like you, where you are going to have a shot.
Wow. That's powerful. Ooh, Dr. Wendy.
It is. I'm going to stick to the drop the strong Black woman myth. Drop that, because there's a thought that Black women should run around with an S on their chest and do everything. And that's exactly what happens. They mistake ambition, because we do come to the table educated, because we do come to the table articulate, because we do come prepared, ready, and we deliver, that let's give them all of the work to do. Let's give them more than their share. Yeah. And then the whole evaluation piece is unfair. And what happens is that that wears on our health. So what happens to the healthy Black woman, the healthy woman of color in those spaces? So there's... Don't just check on one person, not just the Black women, check on everyone, but let's be mindful as to what we are asking them to do. How much are you contributing to the wellness of the women of color in leadership positions? That should be first and foremost. So dropping the strong Black woman myth would mean to take care of the women leaders, and the women leaders themselves. Take care of yourself by building your own board of directors. As we heard before previously on the Access Point, build your own group of support outside of the organization. You're going to need somewhere to go to have these conversations to help build you back up, to walk back in that door and do it one more time.
And I love that, because I think this idea of the strong Black woman myth is two-sided. And so there's sort of the others who are looking out and assuming that. And then it also is the inner one that Black women have to then adopt, right? This is how they see me, and I have to show up in this way. And so in the description of this show, we talked about how to deal with the woman king when she is not so royal. And I think it comes from that. It comes from having to wear this crown, having to shoulder these burdens, having to do the emotional housekeeping, and to still show up as a strong Black woman and live in this myth, in this mystical place that you can't be the authentic woman that you're asking, particularly if you are the first and you are groundbreaking and you are crashing and breaking this glass ceiling. You are then in this pressure cooker that forces so many other things, and it forces you to sort of move into some of these less than democratic leadership styles that Dr. Sims talked about, that gives us this warped view of what it means to be a Black woman thriving in a place, because maybe she's not thriving.
And I just wanted to follow up on that. So one is there's this concept, you know, Black women actually experience all of these micro and sometimes macro aggressions. And what the research is starting to make is very clear, is that racism is weathering on Black people and Black women. And so what does weathering mean? It makes us older before our times. It makes us sicker before our times. And it's the environment. So if you really want to have Black women thrive, you need to get rid of the macro and the microaggressions that they are experiencing in the workplace. You need to make sure that there is a critical mass of them so that they have friends at work, support systems. You need to make sure that you're looking at your systems in your organization and say, what did this system derive from? Was this standards developed based on men having women at home so that they could spend 20 hours in the week and half of that golfing, you know? So this is not sustainable. We need to have a model that reflects, again, mutual adaptability so that we can all show up. And I would say for Black women, unfortunately, you know, I'm sure Dr. Wendy has also experienced that every organization I have left, they have replaced me with 2 and 3 people.
Come on now.
2 and 3
people. You can say that again.
Look how much work you were doing.
I remember.
And as long as you continue to do it, they will allow you. That's why I say about ambition. When they see ambition, it's like, oh, more work. Ooh, more work. Ooh, take on this project.
Exactly. So try and not to put yourself in positions where people are expecting you to work all of these crazy hours. And the other flip side of that is the level of mediocrity of the other employees.
Wait a minute.
And the fact that those employees have a job and you're outworking them 2 to 3 times. There's a problem.
There is a problem. You know how many times I've heard a person of color, particularly a woman of color, say, I'm running laps around the people here. Laps around them. They can't hold a fire to me. Man, I love this. So what did we learn today when we think about the woman king in the workplace and what it means to be part of her reign and how she operates and how she navigates the space? What we learned is that as an employee, we want you to make sure you are developing the credentials, the pedigree, and the social skills to be in the place, to navigate the place, and to be successful. We want you to search for an organization that matches well with your values and that values you. We want employees to become more reflective about the decisions they're making, the things that they're saying, and how they engage with the woman king in the workspace. We want employees to get out of their comfort zones, to not only view leadership in the paradigm that you learned and that you came up under, but you can see it in different ways and different configurations. Suspend your ideas of how you've always viewed leadership for the Black women, for the women king, for the women of color. Try not to be the first in the organization. We want you to be the first in something, but the first in the organization can create some particular challenges that we worry about and want to protect you from that. Drop the strong Black woman myth, because it can be harmful to not only you and to others in the organization. Build your own board of directors. If you are a supervisor, a manager, and leader, we want you to start painting the picture of how you want to see leadership. So we create new paradigms and invite people into those. Stop making assumptions about what women can and cannot do. That is not your role. Take them for who they are. Recognize the importance of democratic leadership styles and acknowledge that we need to have within our organizations more than one model of leadership that we apply and that we are able to adjust that as necessary. Stop forcing women to do the emotional housekeeping. Let somebody else bring the bagels. Let somebody else take care of all the little things. Let them continue to lead in their areas of expertise and prominence. Listen to the voices of people you hire and the people who leave, so that you understand and you become a learning organization, that you help your organization become a learning organization, to stop making these mistakes. Stop othering women on race and gender, because it creates more division than you think. Provide the developmental support that we want all of our employees to have. If this is part of your group or your work team, speak up. Support women when you see them being othered and disadvantaged. Become good allies and create alliances. From the organization, we spent a lot of our time today talking about what to do from organizational standpoints for senior leaders and senior leadership teams. Reimagine what you have always thought about leaders and leadership. Recognize that there is a leaky pipeline. We've got many, many more women coming out of college, but they are not getting to the ranks within the promotions in your organizations. Recognize there's a thorny floor. That you may give the woman the crown, she may show up as a woman king, but the men around her will not accept her. And actually, some of the research we looked at says the women may not accept her either. Identify mentors and sponsors. Deconstruct systems that perpetuate bias. Create clear criteria. Develop best practices that are not subjective. Acknowledge, one of my favorite terms for tonight, the double whammies, that gender and racial bias. Acknowledge those double whammies and create strategies to mitigate those. Dismantle respect for bad behavior and poor leadership. That is not how we operate here. We want to make sure we create new examples for people to follow. Train people on the intersectional models of leadership. Create an organization that is based on cultural humility and train people on that to understand that you are not less than because you don't look like or act like me. Work on developing a mutual adaptability for the employee and for the organization. Stop using fit as code for you need to be like me. Start examining organizational culture. Be intentional about self-studies of that and evaluating it regularly. Hire for the soft skills related to inclusion, because that's how your organization will grow and flourish, and allow people to show up, particularly women of color, to show up as their full authentic selves in this era of mutual adaptivity. I think we covered a lot today. So what I want to ask you, Dr. Sims, Dr. Wendy, if people do not listen to how we framed all these issues today in understanding the navigation of the workplace by the woman king, what is the black tax they pay? What is the price you pay for not heeding this advice? Dr. Sims.
You get a perpetuation of a system that was not created for you, was not there to support you. And so we lag behind. So we definitely want to have systems where we can grow, we can flourish. And when we do that, organizations reap the benefits because they've not been able to tap into all of the wonders that Black women can bring to the workplace when they can bring their full authentic selves.
Dr. Wendy.
You will sacrifice your self-worth, your self-confidence, and that is not worth it.
And for me, if any of you watched the film The Woman King, what you know is that when she was dismissed and her opinion and advice was not adhered to, she went to conquer. And so if we do not heed the advice of these experts and the incredible information that we learned from Dr. Sims and Dr. Wendy today, we run the risk of being taken out by the woman king. Thank you so much for joining us. I always love these conversations. Dr. Cynthia Sims, it is an honor to have an opportunity to share a microphone space with you, and learning from you is always a pleasure. I appreciate your expertise. You bring value and your presence is overwhelming. I thank you so much for joining us today. It is
yes, indeed.
incredible to be on this show with you every week, Dr. Wendy. Thank you so much for helping me grow. I appreciate that I got to be one of the facilitators for a conversation about women. I'm always greater when y'all around. If you want to continue to connect with us and Living Corporate, here are all of our socials. On the web, we are livingcorporate.tv. On Twitter, we are at Living Corporate. For LinkedIn, we are living-corporate. For Instagram, we are at Living Corporate. And if you want to check out our podcast, we record live on Twitter Spaces at 7:30 p.m. Eastern on Thursdays. You can get this podcast on any podcast platform that you like, that you choose. We want you to tell us what you feel, like, comment, share, rate us. We are listening. You've been sending me messages on Facebook and on Instagram asking for us to share the links to the studies that we're citing and the resources that we're sharing. We are working on it. It is coming soon. Thank you, everybody. I appreciate your time. Have a wonderful night.
Thank you. Good night.
Living Corporate is brought to you by Textio. Today's top talent is everywhere, representing everyone. And our work environment should reflect the level of inclusion to meet that standard. Textio achieves this in building more equitable company cultures through the language we use in our job postings. That culture is formed one hire at a time, making the words we use to reach more diverse candidates all the more important. Our advanced language insights and employer brand content is what drives our mission of inclusion. Through our industry-leading application of artificial intelligence and machine learning, we're able to widen companies' reach in finding and building upon the very diverse talent that empowers a culture of belonging. Every door should be open to every qualified job seeker. Again, that's Textio.